AARP spokeswoman Michelle Shearer says about 500,000 Ohioans came close to losing health coverage today, but the state legislature ultimately withdrew their veto override to freeze Medicaid. Part of a new housing project in Moorhead will be ready this August, and Lewis County is boasting a new 728-acre nature preserve. Tilden Johnson will bring you sports news today, followed by Bud Luke with the stocks. There's a 50% chance of rain tonight, lows around 67 degrees. A full check of the forecast after this news. A man was arrested in Boyd County after police say he tried to sell heroin to undercover officers. 30-year-old Dustin Austin of Akron, Ohio, is facing charges of importing and trafficking heroin and first-degree possession of a controlled substance after deputies say they purchased an unspecified amount of white heroin from him. Officers seized heroin, cash, cell phones, and drug paraphernalia. Austin is housed in the Boyd County Detention Center. A Flemingsburg man has been sentenced in U.S. District Court for his role in the overdose death of an Augusta woman last August. According to the Maysville Ledger Independent, 26-year-old Anthony Mason will spend the next 60 months in federal prison after being found guilty of aiding and abetting with intent to distribute a controlled substance containing heroin and fentanyl. Mason was part of a group of heroin users who pooled their money together to buy a batch of the drug laced with fentanyl. That batch ended up killing Amanda Borgman, who was found dead near Orangeburg in Mason County. The group of users, including Borgman's husband, Jonathan, were arrested and charged in connection with her death. A Clark County lawsuit will not be reviewed again, MSPR's Chaz Jenkins reports.
According to the Lexington Herald Leader, the Kentucky Court of Appeals will not rehear a case involving Clark Circuit Judge William Klaus Jr.'s decision in 2015 that supported the Clark Fiscal Court's approval to rezone 165 acres of agricultural land. Their approval would allow the Allen Company, a road construction firm, to reopen a closed underground limestone quarry. A petition to get a rehearing was requested in wake of the Court of Appeals affirming Klaus's decision in April of this year. On June 16th, the petition was denied. Now there's a chance the case may be heard by the Kentucky Supreme Court. A group in Clark County has opposed the rezoning move and the reopening of the quarry. For Moorhead State Public Radio News, I'm Chaz Jenkins.
A $15 million renovation project, paid for by the state, is on schedule and under budget at Fleming County High School, according to District Superintendent Brian Kreisman. Kreisman says the first phase of the project, which includes the building's gymnasium and its multi-purpose room, are just about finished. Work is now being done to refurbish its 30-year-old exterior, while its career and technical education wings are about to be improved.
Many of the CT areas, except maybe the culinary and the welding area, they'll be hopefully done by the time students get back. We've still got to construct the Panthers Market. We've got some work dealing with handicapped access around the football field. We've got a press box that just arrived last week for the softball field. We've also got to finish up the cafeteria, and then there will be minor things that will take place over the year.
Fleming High School's redesigned cafeteria and commons area will include a food court, bank, farmer's market, and an apparel store, all of which will be run by students. The entire project began in May of last year and is scheduled for completion in June of next year. The city of Maysville has approved the deed for the Maysville Conference Center. With more, here's Sean Delaney.
According to the Ledger Independent, the Maysville City Commission gave Mayor David Cartmell the green light to execute the deed to David and Diana Case. The Cases bought the building for $135,000. The building, which was renovated in 2002, did not generate revenue for the city. It was auctioned off in April. The Cases say they will operate their catering business out of the building and lease the other rooms to various businesses. For Moorhead State Public Radio News, I'm Sean Delaney.
Ashland City Commissioners yesterday approved up to $4.5 million to go toward developers who plan on converting the Ashland Plaza Hotel into a Marriott Hotel. The Independent reports the project is being funded by an agreement between the city and the Boyd County Fiscal Court, which establishes a tax increment financing district in downtown Ashland for the duration of the project. The TIF district directs all city and county tax increases to be revenue for the development, turning them into bonds for the next 20 years. The city is also waiting on approval from Frankfurt to make another TIF district that will capture state tax increases. Lexington-based Commonwealth Economics estimates the city's temporary TIF district will accrue around $16.5 million in total. A new housing development is being constructed on Moorhead's west side. Steve Williams of South Fork General Management is building 48 units for his mixed-use development, which will be called Lakiji Estates. They will include one-bedroom efficiency homes, two-bedroom houses, one-story two-bedroom duplexes, and two-story townhomes.
I felt compelled to provide some better quality, you know, housing in a good location that can service, you know, people's needs as far as, you know, most units, rental units that I've seen out there have been mostly two-bedroom, you know, one bathroom and stuff like that. Add the extra bathroom to accommodate people that like a little more privacy. And then also to construct better quality, you know, housing rather than just apartments.
16 of the units are expected to be completed this August, with 16 to be built next spring. Construction of the final 16 dwellings will happen in the fall of next year. In order to prevent any potential flooding problems involving nearby Triplet Creek, Williams says he had the property for the development raised 2 feet above FEMA's requirements for the area. Lewis County has a new nature preserve. The State Nature Preserves Commission last weekend opened the 728-acre Crooked Creek State Nature Preserve. The area features a trail that's 1.3 miles long. Lewis Judge Executive Todd Ruckel says the new preserve had been in the works for several months.
The Nature Preserve had a lady that just contacted me and asked me about if I wanted to go on a guided hike with them last year, and there was about 10 of us that went. And I went out and took a little hike with them, and it's some beautiful country out in there. And we done that, and it just proceeded from there.
While the Kentucky Nature Preserves Commission will develop trail maps and manage the Crooked Creek Preserve, along with its trail and the habitat near that path, Lewis County will help by doing parking lot upkeep and routine mowing and trail maintenance. Things are going well with the effort to rebuild the Mountain Parkway, with about a third of the job already completed. According to the project's lead engineer, Marshall Carrier, most of the work in recent months has occurred in the Sawyersville area. Meanwhile, designers are finishing the blueprints for the initiative's western section. Carrier says the state has already spent $400 of the $753 million that was initially earmarked for the parkway's improvements back in 2014.
What we've let to date isn't necessarily proportionate to what the budget, you would think the budget would reflect for a third of the project. But again, we're on schedule right now, and if all holds true and additional funds will become available in the future, we can certainly deliver the rest of the Mountain Parkway, hopefully in the coming years, barring any, you know, tremendous funding or environmental impacts.
Carrier says it's been more costly to make improvements to the eastern part of the parkway since the terrain there is much more mountainous and rugged. The U.S. House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee approved a bill last week that would revive plans to permanently store the nation's high-level radioactive waste at Yucca Mountain in Nevada after transporting it through Kentucky and 43 other states. Dan Hyman has more.
H.R. 3053 passed the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee last month, breathing new life into canceled plans for a controversial nuclear waste repository inside Yucca Mountain in Nevada. According to Kevin Camps, radioactive waste specialist at the group Beyond Nuclear, the plan environmentalists have dubbed Mobile Chernobyl would send spent fuel rods from nuclear reactors through 100 major cities in 44 states and 370 congressional districts.
Many of them served by members who voted in favor of this thing, and the risks are great of accidents or attacks releasing catastrophic amounts of hazardous radioactivity in an urban area.
The federal government is legally responsible for finding permanent storage for nuclear waste. Dan Hyman reporting.
The American Red Cross has issued an emergency call for blood donations in central Kentucky, citing a critical supply shortage. The organization says there have been 61,000 fewer donations than needed over the last 2 months. A blood drive will be held at the Moorhead Walmart from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Friday, July 14th. Information on other donation opportunities in the region can be found at redcrossblood.org. Ohio Republicans today decided not to undo Governor John Kasich's line item veto of a Medicaid freeze. The move would have booted thousands of people off health care. Brett McPherson reports.
If the override is successful, the provision allowing new Medicaid enrollees beyond July 1, 2018 would be halted, and an estimated 500,000 people could lose coverage almost immediately. Michelle Shire with AARP Ohio says in a state with some of the highest mortality rates for opioid addiction in the country, services lost from Medicaid cuts have massive implications.
But it's not just opioids. There are more people who die of heart attacks in this state than addiction. We need this continuous care. We need this expanded care for the most vulnerable, for people who have become poor because of their illness.
Medicaid is among other cuts to the state budget that lawmakers included to address revenue shortfalls. AARP and 200 other health advocacy groups are rallying against the override.
This is Brett McPherson.
The federal government has given Kentucky more time to overhaul its driver's license program. The Department of Homeland Security has given the Commonwealth until October 10th to comply with the federal Real ID Act. The Real ID Act was passed in 2005 and intended to beef up security in the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Earlier this year, state lawmakers passed a law allowing Kentuckians to purchase a voluntary travel ID, which would replace the standard driver's license. The travel IDs are optional, but if you don't have one, you won't be able to use your standard driver's license to board a domestic flight or enter a U.S. military base. State officials say they will ask for another extension in October that will push the deadline for the program until January 2019. Former Kentucky Supreme Court Chief Justice John S. Palmore has died. As WUKY's Josh James reports, the long-serving justice is being remembered as a towering figure in Kentucky law.
Born in the Panama Canal Zone in 1917, Palmore attended high school in Bowling Green and landed a job at a Henderson law firm out of college, a career that was put on hold while he served in the Navy during World War II. Palmore went on to work his way up to the Kentucky Court of Appeals, followed by the Supreme Court. Current Chief Justice and friend John D. Menton says in addition to being a, quote, masterful storyteller with a vivid memory for details, Palmore helped implement judicial reforms in the mid-1970s as the state transitioned to a more modern court system. In a 2007 University of Kentucky oral history interview, the influential jurist said he recommended a hands-off approach for the court at the time.
I thought that the court really should stay out of that. Some that's of them did right. get active in it. I thought they should stay out of
because
it.
Because of your nonpartisan.
Well, that's role. Right, because people think we were trying to do something for ourselves.
That's
you know?
True, right.
Palmore left his mark on Kentucky law by helping draft the state's penal code and publishing a jury manual still used by trial judges today. He passed away on July 4th at the age of 99. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
And finally today, a Lee County woman says she's counting her blessings after surviving a gunshot to the back of the head. According to WKYT, Debbie Dunaway was celebrating the 4th of July on a boat in the Kentucky River with her husband. She says they were watching a fireworks show when she felt a ping just above her neck.
I thought I was going to die. It felt like somebody had took a big hammer and hit me as hard as they could in the back of the head.
Dunaway says at first she thought she was bitten by a bug or struck by a firework. The couple quickly realized she had been shot. She was rushed to the University of Kentucky Medical Center, where doctors were shocked to find that the bullet only pierced her skin. Police believe the bullet ricocheted before striking Dunaway. They're not sure who fired the shot. Turning now to a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening region. Tonight, a 50% chance of thunderstorms early. We'll see lows around 67 degrees. Tomorrow, partly cloudy skies, a slight chance of rain, highs in the mid-80s. Tomorrow night, a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, lows around 68 degrees. On Saturday, mostly sunny, highs up around 80. That night, clear with lows around 57. And on Sunday, mostly sunny, highs around 82 degrees. It's currently 82 degrees in Ashland right now. It's 76 in Flemingsburg, 85 in Inez, 80 degrees in Winchester, 72 in Lexington, and 79 degrees here on the campus of Morehead State University. The time is 4:46. You are tuned in to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. On today's feature segment, we hear from commentator Dr. John Modaff, who points out that being this summer, it's time for people to practice true and complete equality for all persons and body parts.
Back in 2002, then Attorney General John Ashcroft was ridiculed for having curtains put up to cover the exposed female breast on a statue at the Justice Department. People called him a prude, insisting that the female form is beautiful and that breasts are not offensive. Fast forward 15 years, not much has changed. Women are still fighting for the right to go shirtless, to be equal to men. It can't be the nipples. Men have those too, in case you hadn't gone outside in the summer lately. No, it can't be the nipples. And it can't be the breasts, sans nipples, because current fashion provides numerous configurations where nearly every part of the breast is displayed except the nipples, indicating people are fine with that. So what is the socio-cultural magic that occurs when a breast and a nipple come together on one body in public when the human is female? What is wrong with us? Oh, sure, some people think breasts are the same as genitals. Those people need to go back to biology class. Though, frankly, I can't see why genitals have been declared unfit for viewing either. For me, most people's elbows are far more worthy of covering. No, this whole breast dust-up can't have anything to do with logic or reason. There must be something else going on. And to understand that, we may have to return to old Athens. Some scholars suggest that the breast became taboo as the role of women changed in Athens. As women fell from an ancient role of appreciation and power, they were cloistered in the home and made subject to an emerging and expanding patriarchy. Yes, once again, we have men to thank for a women's issue. The argument in favor of equality for display of the female breasts is simple. They are not genitals, they are not naturally dirty or requiring of special handling like other parts of the body one might call to mind, and finally, breasts are useful and literally a fountain of life and comfort for babies. What's to complain about then? Why would it benefit anyone to treat women's bodies, particularly their breasts, as some sort of dirty thing, something to be hidden or shown only under certain conditions? Why, even breastfeeding women have to defend themselves against charges of indecency when feeding in public spaces, as if the breasts were going to jump off their chest and chase people around the bar or the church or the courtroom or the basketball court. Nonsense. The baby would never let go long enough for that to happen. No, people freaking out about breastfeeding are freaked out about breasts, not because breasts are scary, like snakes or Ford Pintos, but because they have been trained to consider women's bodies a dirty thing, to be hidden except when someone wants to say something or make some money. Let's get over it. Time to free the nipple, the breast, and any other part someone wants to set into the wind. Let's grow up. I'm John Modaff.
When he's not looking for complete autonomy for all parts of the human anatomy, Dr. John Modaff works as a professor of speech at Morehead State University. Tilden Johnson has a check of your sports news in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from The Bakery on Main, next to Pasquale's on East Main Street in Morehead. The Bakery on Main prepares made-from-scratch breads, cakes, pies, tarts, and cookies. Glazed, cream, and fruit-filled donuts made fresh Monday, Friday, and Saturday. Catering for weddings, birthdays, bridal, and baby showers. Open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Orders by phone at 606-783-0101 and online at thebakeryonmain.com.
One more time in the Mile High City. For Morehead State Public Radio Sports, I'm Tilden Johnson.
The Cincinnati Reds are back in Denver today looking to avenge their 5-3 loss last night to the Colorado Rockies. That loss dropped the Reds' record to 36-48, putting them dead last in the National League Central. They also got some bad news yesterday. A shoulder injury will sideline catcher Devin Mesoraco through the All-Star break at least. However, manager Brian Price says it doesn't appear that the former All-Star is dealing with any serious structural damage.
Doesn't look like there's any real structural damage. Looks like he has a lat strain that after 10 days on the DL, we'll kind of reassess how close he is to coming back to play. Of course, you know, you always fear the worst, unfortunately, with these things. If it could have been something that needed to be operated on or whatever, and it doesn't seem like that's the case.
Mesoraco has had his problems with injuries, missing much of the last two seasons because of hip and arm injuries. Angel Hernandez, who sued Major League Baseball this week, alleging racial discrimination, is among the umpires for Tuesday's All-Star game in Miami. Hernandez will be at first base as part of a crew headed by Joe West, who last month became the third umpire to work 5,000 regular season games. West will be behind the plate calling the balls and strikes. The rest of the crew announced Thursday includes Mark Carlson, Chris Conroy, Manny Gonzalez, and Mike Estabrook. The replay umpire in New York will be Doug Eddings. When talking about recruiting this summer for his program, Morehead State baseball coach Mike McGuire says he and his assistants are not focusing on finding players to help the Eagles next season. According to McGuire, the group wants to find long-range prospects that will help MSU further on down the road.
We're thinking about the 2019 season. We're really looking at 2018 high school grads. As well as 2019 high school grad. So, you know, you're pretty much set for the 2018 roster. You know, still maybe like one late addition or something, but for the most part, we're looking at the future.
McGuire notes that it's important to work ahead in recruiting, assessing your program's possible needs a couple of seasons in advance of them. Former two-sport professional athlete Gene Conley has died at the age of 86. As a pitcher, Conley helped the Milwaukee Braves win the 1957 World Series title. He won 91 games during his big league career. On the hardwood, he helped the Boston Celtics earn three straight NBA titles from 1959 through 1961. All of the members of the Morehead State men's basketball team are now on campus. They're working in the weight room and on the court to improve their conditioning and individual skills while also getting some limited chances to sharpen up their teamwork. After signing on to become the league's full-time head coach in mid-March, former assistant Preston Spradlin admits with 10 new players on his roster, it feels like he's starting with a clean slate.
It's exciting to have it from day one and kind of build it and start fresh is a real exciting time. It's kind of like a dream come true, but we're enjoying it and we're having fun with it, and a lot of excitement to get these guys here.
In addition to working on their game, the Basketball Eagles are also taking classes to get a jump start on their schoolwork. Morehead State women's basketball coach Greg Todd is feeling pretty good about things right now. After taking MSU to a 21-win campaign last season that included the Eagles' first-ever trip to the WNIT, Todd was given a 2-year contract extension last week. According to the coach, his program is on the upswing.
We were able to build, I feel like, a very very good foundation with good players, and you know, I think we're on the right direction. So I feel like I also have a great staff, and you know, have some young coaches that are doing a lot of great things.
Todd's players have just returned to the MSU campus to start summer workouts. A former UK and Mason County basketball star is getting another shot at the NBA. MSPR's Sean Delaney reports.
The Lexington Herald Leader quotes overseas basketball reporter David Pick as saying that Darius Miller is finalizing a contract with the New Orleans Pelicans. In the Big Easy, the forward will be reunited with former Kentucky teammates Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. Another ex-cat, James Young, will play for the Pelicans Summer League squad in Las Vegas. The 27-year-old Miller was a second-round pick by New Orleans in the 2012 draft, but was cut 5 games into the following season. He's played the last 3 years for Germany's Brose Baskets. He's averaged over 12 points, nearly 3 rebounds, and 2 assists per game last season. Reporting for MSBR Sports, I'm Sean Delaney.
Ernest Gulbis is back at the third round at Wimbledon for the second time. The unseeded Gulbis beat Juan Martin Del Potro and will next face three-time champion Novak Djokovic. Elsewhere, Novak Djokovic advanced to the third round at Wimbledon for the ninth consecutive year, beating Adam Pavlicek. Pavlicek, a 22-year-old Czech making his first appearance at the All England Club, grew up idolizing Djokovic. Ranked number 136, he turned pro in 2012 and was making only his third appearance in a Grand Slam. Five-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady is adding the title of author to his resume. Simon & Schuster has announced that it will publish the Patriots quarterback debut book in September. The TB12 method, how to achieve a lifetime of sustained peak performance, is described by the publisher as an athlete's Bible that will reveal Brady's methods for success. The book will explore Brady's path to his unusual training and exercise regimen. For Morehead State Public Radio Sports, I'm Tilden Johnson.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics. The Morehead State cheerleading program will host a summer stunt camp on July 17th and 18th. The camp is open to all individuals 8 years of age and older. The deadline to register is July 10th. More information online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks closed lower as technology stocks declined amid a rise in global bond yields, and the Dow Industrials did finish with a loss of 158.13 at 21,320.04. The S&P 500 was down 22.79 at 2409.75, and the NASDAQ Composite was down 61.39 to finish at 6,089.46. New York Stock Exchange breadth was over 4-1 in favor of losing stocks over winners. Oil prices settled almost 1% higher at $45.52 a barrel after earlier rising more than 2%. The U.S. Energy Information Administration reported U.S. commercial crude inventories fell by a more than expected 6.3 million barrels in the week through June 30th. Energy stocks traded more than 1.8% lower as the second worst performer in the S&P 500, so energy stocks not being helped out by the move in crude prices today. Global sovereign bond yields held higher. The 10-year German Bund yield broke above 0.5% for the first time since January 2016, and the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield climbed to 2.38%. And, of course, these higher bond rates and these lower bond prices are a result of potential tightening of monetary supply by both the European Central Bank and the American Federal Reserve. Shares of Facebook, Tesla, Apple, Netflix, and Google parent Alphabet all traded lower, pushing the technology select sector SPDR exchange traded fund down by almost 1%. Investors in the U.S. also focused on a series of economic data releases. A report from ADP and Moody's Analytics showed the U.S. economy added 158,000 jobs last month, which was less than expected. And this report usually serves as a warm-up act for the Bureau of Labor Statistics monthly employment report, which will come out tomorrow morning. Also released today, the IHS Market Services PMI for June, which showed the strongest expansion in business activity since January, and the ISM Non-Manufacturing Index, which itself rose to 57.4 in June from 56.9 in May. Gold futures for August delivery rose $1.60, finishing at $1,223.30 an ounce. In Europe, the Stoxx 600 was down about 0.67% as most European bourses were lower. In the Far East, the Nikkei was down 0.44% and the Hang Seng was down 0.22% as most Asian markets were weak overnight as well. Among Dow industrial stocks, the best performers were DuPont and Walmart. The worst performers were GE and Intel. In the S&P 500, the best performers were OneOK and Monster Beverage, and the worst performers were L Brands and Patterson Companies. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Global down 45 cents at $65.49, CSX down 50 cents at $54.59, AEP up 20 cents at $69.02, AK Steel down 11 cents at $6.18, Marathon Petroleum down 4 cents at $52.86, and Kroger was down 10 cents to finish at $23.13. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Mountain Edition had help today from Chuck Meraz, Paul Hitchcock, Ellen Barnett, Sean Delaney, Chaz Jenkins, and Tilden Johnson. Josh James and Breck McPherson, along with Dan Hyman and MSU professor John Modaff. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, translator W202BH in Inez.
China has already put some pressure. The question is, will China put regime-threatening pressure on North Korea?
As the U.S. demands more from China on North Korea, we consider the options.
It's Thursday, July 6th, and this is All